Hi, this is Mrs. English again. Today I'm reading to you from Homer's Odyssey, the Richmond Latimer translation, Book 2. Homer's Odyssey, Book 2. Now, when the young dawn showed again with her rosy fingers, the dear son of Odysseus stirred from where he was sleeping and put on his clothes and slung a sharp sword over his shoulder. Underneath his shining feet, he bound the fair sandals and went on his way from the chamber like a god in presence. He gave the word now to his clear-voiced heralds to summon by proclamation to assembly the flowing-haired Achaeans, and the heralds made their cry, and the men were assembled swiftly. Now when they were all assembled in one place together, line 10, he went on his way to assembly, in his hands holding a bronze spear, not all alone, but a pair of light-footed dogs went with him. Athena drifted an enchantment of grace upon him, and all the people had their eyes on him as he came forward. I believe this means, line 12, that Athena beautified him. Line 14. He sat in his father's seat, and the elders made way before him. The first now to speak to them was the hero Aegyptius, who was bent over with age and had seen things beyond number. His own dear son, Antiphus, the spearman, had gone off with godlike Odysseus to Ilion, land of good horses, in the hollow ships, and now the wild Cyclops had killed him deep in his cave, and this was the last man he had eaten. The last man the Cyclops had eaten. He had three other sons. One of them, Eurynomus, went with the suitors. The other two kept the estates of their fathers. Even so, he could not forget the lost one. He grieved and mourned for him, and it was in tears for him now that he stood forth and addressed them. Now Aegyptius is speaking to the council. Line 25. Hear me now, men of Ithaca, and the word I give you. Never has there been an assembly of us or any session since great Odysseus went away in the hollow vessels. Oh my, no council for 20 years. Now who has gathered us in this way? What need has befallen? Which of the younger men, or one of us who are older? Line 30. Has he been hearing some message about the return of the army, which, having heard it first, he could now explain to us? Or has he some other public matter to set forth and argue? I think he is a good man and useful, so may Zeus grant him good accomplishment for whatever it is his mind desires. He spoke, and the dear son of Odysseus was glad for the omen, nor did he remain seated long. His heart was for speaking, and he stood in the middle of the assembly. The herald, Pisenor, a man of deep discretion, put into his hands the scepter. And so now we have Telemachus holding the scepter of his father. First, in answer to the old man, he spoke and addressed him. Line 40. This is Telemachus, first to the man who introduced him and then to the council. Old sir, the man is not far, but here you yourself shall know him. It is I who assembled the people. To me this grief comes closest. Not that I heard some message about the return of the army, which, having heard it first, I could now explain to you, nor have I some other public matter to set forth and argue, but my own need, the evil that has befallen my household. There are two evils. I have lost a noble father, one who was king once over you here, and was kind to you like a father, and now here is a greater evil, one which presently will break up the whole house and destroy all my livelihood. For my mother, line 50, against her will is beset by suitors, own sons to the men who are greatest hereabouts. These shrink from making the journey to the house of her father Icarius, so that he might take bride's gifts for his daughter and bestow her on the one he wished, who came as his favorite. Rather, all their days they come and loiter in our house and sacrifice our oxen and our sheep and our fat goats and make a holiday feast of it and drink the bright wine recklessly. Most of our substance is wasted. We have no man here, such as Odysseus was, to drive this curse from the household. We ourselves, line 60, are not the men to do it. We must be weaklings in such a case, not men well seasoned in battle. I would defend myself if the power were in me. No longer are all things endurable that have been done, and beyond all decency my house has been destroyed. Even you must be scandalized and ashamed before the neighboring men about us, the people who live around our land, fear also the god's anger, lest they, astonished by evil actions, turn against you. Okay, don't you care what the neighbors think? I supplicate you by Zeus the Olympian, and by Themis, who breaks up the assemblies of men and calls them in session, line 70, Let be, my friends, and leave me alone with my bitter sorrow to waste away, unless my noble father Odysseus, at some time in anger, did evil to the strong-grieved Achaeans, for which, angry with me in revenge, you do me evil in setting these on me. Are you setting these suitors, your sons, on me because my dad did something you didn't like? But for me, it would be far better for you to eat away my treasures and eat my cattle. If you were to eat them, there might be a recompense some day. Okay, it would be far better for you to eat my treasures and eat my cattle, line 75. If you were to eat them, there might be a recompense some day, for we could go through all the settlement with claims made public, asking for our goods again until it was all re-given. But now you're heaping me with troubles I cannot deal with. So he spoke in anger, line 80, and dashed to the ground the scepter in a stormburst of tears, and pity held all the people. Now all the rest were stricken to silence. None was so hardy as to answer, angry word against word, the speech of Telemachus. It was Antinous alone spoke to him in answer. High-spoken, intemperate Telemachus, what accusations you've made to our shame, trying to turn opinion against us, and yet you have no cause to blame the Achaean suitors, but it is your own dear mother, and she is greatly resourceful. And now it is the third year, and will be the fourth year presently, since she has been denying the desires of the Achaeans. For she holds out hope to all, and makes promises to each man, sending us messages, but her mind has other intentions. And here is another stratagem of her heart's devising. Okay, wait till I tell you about this other thing she's done. She set up a great loom in her palace, and set to weaving a web of threads, long and fine. Line 95. Then she said to us, young men, my suitors, now that the great Odysseus has perished, wait, though you are eager to marry me, until I finish, wait until I finish this web, so that my weaving will not be useless and wasted. This is a shroud for the hero Laertes. This is the father of Odysseus. For when the destructive doom of death, line 100, which lays men low shall take him, when he dies, lest any Achaean woman in this neighborhood hold it against me, that a man of so many conquests lies with no sheet to wind him. So she told the suitors, Laertes is too great a man to be buried without some special shroud, burial shroud made for him, so you have to be patient while I finish this. So she spoke, and the proud heart in us was persuaded. Thereafter, in the daytime, she would weave at her great loom, 105, but in the night she would have torches set by and undo it. So for 3 years she was secret in her design, convincing the Achaeans. But when the fourth year came, with the seasons returning, one of her women, who knew the whole of the story, told us, and we found her at the act of undoing her glorious weaving. So one of the maids ratted on Penelope. Line 110. So, against her will and by force, she had to finish it. Now the suitors answer you thus, so that you yourself may know it in your mind, and all the Achaeans may know it. Send your mother back, and instruct her to be married to any man her father desires, and who pleases her also. But if she continues to torment the sons of the Achaeans, since she is so dowered with the wisdom bestowed by Athene, to be expert in beautiful work, to have good character and cleverness, such as we are not told of, even of the ancient queens, okay, we never knew anybody like this, the fair tressed Achaean women of times before us, Tyro and Alcmene and Mycenae, wearer of garlands, for none of these knew thoughts so wise as those Penelope knew, yet in this single manner she did not think rightly. So long, I say, will your livelihood and possessions be eaten away, as long as she keeps this purpose, one which the very gods, I think, put into her heart. She is winning a great name for herself, okay, getting chaos, but for you she is causing much loss of substance. So here the suitor Antinous is trying to blame Telemachus' mother, saying she's trying to win great fame by appearing to be more clever than any other woman in history, and she's the one using up your sustenance. That if she were reasonable, she'd go back to the home of her father, and he would pick a suitor that he liked and she liked. Line 127. We will not go back to our own estate, nor will we go elsewhere until she marries whichever Achaean man she fancies. Then the thoughtful Telemachus said to him in answer, Antinous, I cannot thrust the mother who bore me, who raised me, out of the house against her will. My father, alive or dead, is elsewhere in the world. It will be hard to pay back Icarius if willingly I dismiss my mother. Icarius is Penelope's father. I will suffer some evil from her father, and the spirit will give me more yet, for my mother will call down her furies upon me as she goes out of the house, and I shall have the people's resentment. I will not be the one to say that word to her. But as for you, if your feeling is scandalized by my answer, go away from my palace and do your feasting elsewhere, eating up your own possessions, taking turns, household by household. But if you decide it is more profitable and better to go on eating up one man's livelihood without payment, then spoil my house. I will cry out to the gods everlasting in the hope that Zeus might somehow grant a reversal of fortunes. Line 145. Then you may perish in this house with no payment given. And here we have the exact same words from Book 1, almost a prophecy. So spoke Telemachus, and for his sake Zeus of the wide brows sent forth two eagles, soaring high from the peak of the mountain. These for a while sailed on the stream of the wind together, wing and wing, close together, wings spread wide. But when they were over the middle of the vociferous assembly, line 151, they turned on each other suddenly in a thick shudder of wings, and swooped over the heads of all, with eyes glaring and deadly, and tore each other by neck and cheek with their talons, then sped away to the right across the houses and city. Line 155. Then all were astounded at the birds when their eyes saw them, and they pondered in their hearts over what might come of it. And Halitherses, master's son, an aged warrior, spoke to them. He was far beyond the men of his generation in understanding the meaning of birds and reading their portents. And so, of course, we're talking about augury. Now, in kind intention toward all, he spoke and addressed them. Hear me now, men of Ithaca, what I have to tell you, but what I say will be mostly a warning to the suitors, for a great disaster is wheeling down upon them. Surely Odysseus will not be long away from his family, but now already is somewhere close by, working out the death and destruction of all these men, and it will be an evil for many others of us who inhabit sunny Ithaca. So, well beforehand, let us think how we can make them stop, or better, let them stop themselves. It will soon be better for them if they do so. Line 170. I, who foretell this, am not untried. I know what I am saying. Concerning him, I say that everything was accomplished in the way I said it would be at the time the Argives took ship for Ilion, and with them went resourceful Odysseus. I said that after much suffering with all his companions, lost in the 20th year, not recognized by any, he would come home. And now all this is being accomplished. Line 176. So here we even have a prophecy by a prophet, and he says, I've even prophesied this before. He'll come home the 20th year, and oh, look, it's the 20th year. Line 177. Then in turn, Eurymachus, son of Polybus, answered, and of course this is one of the suitors, Old sir, better go home and prophesy to your children, for fear they may suffer some evil to come. In these things I can give a much better interpretation than you can. Many are the birds who under the sun's rays wander the sky. Not all of them mean anything. Odysseus is dead, far away, and how I wish you died with him also. Then you would not be announcing all these predictions, nor would you so stir up Telemachus, who is now angry, looking for the gift for your own household, which he might give you. So Telemachus has bribed you. He's right now thinking what he'll go home and get for you and give to you as a gift, since you've prophesied so well of him. But I will tell you straight out, and it will be a thing accomplished. If you, who know much and have known it long, stir up a younger man, and by talking him round with words encourage his anger, then, first of all, line 190, it will be the worst for him. He will not, on account of all these sayings, be able to accomplish anything. And on you, old sir, we shall lay a penalty, and it will grieve your mind as you pay it, and that for you will be a great sorrow. I myself, before you all, will advise Telemachus. Let him urge his mother to go back to her father's, and they shall appoint the marriage and arrange for the wedding presents in great amount, as ought to go with a beloved daughter. For I think the sons of the Achaeans will not give over their harsh courtship, for in any case we fear no one, and surely not Telemachus, for all he is so eloquent. Nor do we care for any prophecy which you, old sir, may tell us, which will not happen, and which will make you even more hated, and his possessions will wretchedly be eaten away. There will not be compensation ever while she makes the Achaeans put off marriage with her, while we, awaiting this, all our days quarrel for the sake of her excellence, nor ever go after others whom any one of us might properly marry." And so here Eurymachus, one of the suitors, is blaming Penelope even more, that it is Penelope's problem that none of the other young women are getting married. Line 208. Then the thoughtful Telemachus said to him in answer, "Eurymachus, and all you others who are haughty suitors, unholy suitors, I no longer entreat you in these matters, nor speak about them, since by now the gods know about this, as do all the Achaeans. But come now, grant me a swift ship and 20 companions who can convey me on a course from one place to another, for I'm going to Sparta, and going to sandy Pylos, to ask about the homecoming of my father, who is long absent, on the chance of some mortal man telling me, or of hearing a rumor sent by Zeus. She, more than others, spreads news among people." This is just rumor personified. "Then, if I hear my father is alive and on his way home, then, hard-pressed though I be, I will still hold out for another year. But if I hear he has died and lives no longer, then I will make my way home to the beloved land of my fathers and pile up a tomb in his honor and there make sacrifices in great amount as is fitting, and give my mother to a husband." So he spoke and sat down again, and among them rose up Mentor, who once had been the companion of stately Odysseus, and Odysseus, going on the ships, had turned over the household to the old man to keep it well, and so all should obey him. He in kind intention now spoke forth and addressed him, "Hear me now, men of Ithaca, what I have to tell you." Line 230. "No longer now let one who is a sceptered king be eager to be gentle and kind. Be one whose thought is schooled in justice, but let him always rather be harsh and act severely, seeing the way no one of the people he was lord over remembers godlike Odysseus, and he was kind like a father. Now it is not so much the proud suitors I resent for doing their violent acts, by their minds evil devising, for they lay their heads on the line when violently they eat up the house of Odysseus, who, they say to themselves, will not come back. But now I hold against you other people, how you all sit there in silence, and never with an assault of words try to check the suitors, try to stop them, though they are so few and you so many." Then Leocritus, son of Eunor, spoke forth against him, "Mentor, reckless in words, wild in your wits, what a thing you have said, urging them to stop us. It would be difficult even with more men than these to fight us over our feasting." Line 246. "For even if Odysseus of Ithaca himself were to come back and find the haughty suitors feasting in his house and be urgent in his mind to drive them out of his palace, his wife would have no joy of his coming, though she longs for it greatly, but rather he would meet an unworthy destiny if he fought against too many. You've spoken to no purpose. Come then, all people disperse now, each to his own holdings, and Mentor and Halitherses will push forward this man's journey, since these from the first have been his friends, as friends of his father. But I think he will sit still for a long time, waiting for messages here in Ithaca, and will never accomplish this voyage." What did Leocritus, the son of Eunor, just announce? Even if Odysseus did come back, even if he came back, he would meet an unworthy destiny if he fought against too many, and there are more than 100 suitors. So he spoke, line 257, and suddenly broke up the assembly, and the people scattered and went their ways, each to his own house, while the suitors went away into the house of godlike Odysseus. But Telemachus, walking along the sea beach, away from the others, washed his hands in the gray salt water and prayed to Athena. "Hear me, you who came yesterday, a god, into our house and urged me on to go by ship out over the misty face of the sea to ask about the homecoming of my father who is so long absent. Now all this is delayed by the Achaeans, and particularly the suitors in their evil overconfidence." So he spoke in prayer, and from nearby Athena came to him, likening herself to Mentor in voice and appearance. Now she spoke aloud to him and addressed him in winged words. "Telemachus," line 270, "you are to be no thoughtless man, no coward, if truly the strong force of your father is instilled in you. Such a man he was for accomplishing word and action. Your journey, then, will be no vain thing, nor go unaccomplished, But if you are not the seed begotten of him and Penelope, I have no hope that you will accomplish all that you strive for." That was line 275. In other words, Athena says to Telemachus, "Boy, I hope you can live up to that name to be the son of Penelope and the son of Odysseus. Otherwise, you'll never accomplish all this." Line 276. "For few are the children who turn out to be equals of their fathers, and the greater number are worse. Few are better than their father is. But since you are to be no thoughtless man, no coward, and the mind of Odysseus has not altogether given out in you, there is some hope that you can bring all these things to fulfillment. So now, let be the purpose and the planning of these senseless suitors, since they are neither thoughtful men nor just men, and have not realized the death and black fatality that stands close by, so that on a day they all must perish. They don't realize the black death that's coming, because in one day they'll all perish." Line 285. "And that journey, for which you're so urgent, will not be long now. Such a companion am I to you as of your father. I will fit you out a fast ship. I myself will go with you. But now you must go back to the house and join the suitors and get ready provisions for the journey. Pack all in containers. Have wine in handled jars and barley meal, men's marrow in thick leather bags. And I, going around the town, will assemble volunteer companions to go with you. There are ships in plenty here in sea-girt Ithaca, both old and new ones, and I'll look them over for you to find out the best one. And soon we shall stow our gear and put out into the wide sea." Line 296. "So spoke Athena, daughter of Zeus, nor did Telemachus delay long after he had heard the voice of the goddess, but went on his way to the house, the heart troubled within him. He came upon the haughty suitors there in his palace, skinning goats and singeing fattened swine in the courtyard, and Tenedos, with a smile, came straight up to Telemachus, and took him by the hand and spoke and named him, saying, 'High-spoken, intemperate Telemachus, now let no other evil be considered in your heart, neither action nor word, but eat and drink with me as you did in past time. The Achaeans will see to it that all these things are accomplished, the ship and chosen companions, so that you may the more quickly reach sacred Pylos, after news about your proud father.' Then the thoughtful Telemachus said to him in answer," line 310, "Antinous, there is no way for me to dine with you against my will and take my ease when you are so insolent. Is it not enough, you suitors, that in time past you ruined my great and good possessions when I was still in my childhood? But now, when I'm grown big, and by listening to others can learn the truth, and the anger is steaming up inside me, I will endeavor to visit evil destructions upon you, either by going to Pylos or remaining here in the district." Now we learn in line 312 and 313 that as he grew up together, these men were a bane or a curse to him already. Line 318. "But I will go. That journey I speak of will not be made void, but as a passenger, for I control no ship, nor any companions. This, I think, was the way you wished to have it." He spoke, and lightly drew away his hand from Antinous's hand, but the suitors about the house prepared their dinner, and in their conversation they insulted him and mocked him, and thus would go the word of one of the arrogant young men. Line 325. "Surely now Telemachus is devising our murder. Either he will bring some supporters from sandy Pylos, or even from Sparta, and now he is so terribly eager, or perhaps his purpose is to go to Ephyre, that's Corinth, that rich corn land, so that hence he can bring back poisonous medicines, and put them in our wine bowl, and so destroy all of us." Line 330. "And thus would speak another one of these arrogant young men. Who knows whether, when he goes in a hollow ship, he also might perish, straying far from his people, as did Odysseus. Were this to happen, he would lighten all our work for us. Oh, he might even die. Wouldn't that make things easy? Then we could divide up his possessions, 335, and give the house to this man's mother to keep, and to the man who marries her." So they spoke. But he went down into his father's high-roofed and wide storeroom, where gold and bronze were lying piled up, and abundant clothing in the bins, and fragrant olive oil, and in it jars of wine, sweet to drink, aged, were standing, keeping the unmixed divine drink inside them, lined up in order close to the wall, for the day when Odysseus might come home, even after laboring through many hardships. And of course, line 341, the unmixed divine drink, this is the wine that would be poured out as a libation, and then they water the wine down to drink it themselves. It's actually very watered down. Line 3, 4, 4. To close it, there were double doors that fitted together with two halves, and there by night and day was a woman in charge who, with intelligent care, watched over all this. Eurycleia, the daughter of Ops, the son of Pisnor. Now Telemachus called her to the room and spoke to her. Dear nurse, come, draw me some sweet wine in the handled jars, choicest of all you have in your keeping, next after what you are saving for the ill-fated man, Odysseus, of the day when Zeus sprung Odysseus might come home, escaping death and its spirits. Okay, so get me some wine from the best of, you know, the cask with the best wine in it, second only to the one we're saving for Odysseus when he comes home. Fit me 12 in all, and fit them all with covers, and pour me barley into bags, stitched strongly of leather. Line 355. Let me have 20 measures of the choice milled barley. You be the only one that knows this. Let all be gathered together, for I will pick it up in the evening after my mother climbs to her upper chamber and is ready for sleeping. For I am going into Sparta and to sandy Pylos to ask after my dear father's homecoming if I might hear something. So he spoke, and the dear nurse Eurycleia cried out, and bitterly lamenting she addressed him in winged words, Why, my beloved child, has this intention come into your mind? Why do you wish to wander over much country, you, an only and loved son? Illustrious Odysseus has perished far from his country, in some outlandish region, and these men will devise evils against you on your returning. So you shall die by guile, by deceit, and they divide all that is yours. No, but stay here and guard your possessions. It is not right for you to wander and suffer hardships on the barren sea. Then the thoughtful Telemachus said to her in answer, Do not fear, nurse. This plan was not made without a god's will, but swear to tell my beloved mother nothing about this until the 11th day has come, or the 12th hereafter, or until she misses me herself or hears I am absent, so that she may not ruin her lovely skin with weeping. So Eurycleia is sworn to secrecy. You can't tell Penelope, my mother, unless she figures it out on her own or the 12th day comes. So he spoke, line 377. And the old woman swore to the gods a great oath, and after she had sworn to it and completed the oath-taking, she drew the wine in the handled jars at once thereafter and poured his barley into bags stitched strongly of leather. But Telemachus went back into the house and joined the suitors. Now the gray-eyed goddess Athena thought what to do next. In the likeness of Telemachus, she went all through the city, and, standing beside each man as she came to him, told them all to assemble beside the fast ship in the evening. Then she asked Noemon, the glorious son of Phronius, for a fast ship, and he, with good will, promised it to her. And the sun set, and all the journeying ways were darkened. Now she drew the fast ship down to the sea, and in her stowed all the running gear that strong-benched vessels carry. Line 390. She set it at the edge of the harbor, and around her the good companions thronged and were assembled, and the goddess urged on each man. Now the gray-eyed goddess Athena thought what to do next. She went on her way into the house of godlike Odysseus, and there, line 395, she drifted a sweet slumber over the suitors, and struck them as they drank, and knocked the goblets out of their hands, and they went to sleep in the city. Nor did any one sit long after sleep was fallen upon his eyelids. Afterwards, gray-eyed Athena spoke to Telemachus, line 400, when she had called him out from the well-established palace, likening herself to Mentor in voice and appearance. Telemachus, already now your strong-grieved companions are sitting at the oars and waiting for you to set forth. So let us go, and not delay our voyaging longer. So spoke Pallas Athena, and she led the way swiftly, and the man followed behind her, walking in the gods' footsteps. But when they had come down to the sea, and where the ship was, they found the flowing-haired companions there by the seashore. Now the hallowed prince, Telemachus, spoke his word to them. Line 410. Here, friends, let us carry the provisions. They are all ready and stacked in the hall. But my mother has been told nothing of this, nor the rest of the serving women. Only one knows the story. As a side note, it's probable that many of the serving women have been corrupted in this almost 4 years' time by the suitors. They could be in cahoots with them. Telemachus does not know who is a foe and who is a friend, except for Euryclea. So he spoke and led the way, and the rest went with him. They all carried the provisions down and stowed them in a strong benched vessel. Line 415. In the way the dear son of Odysseus directed them. Telemachus went aboard the ship, but Athena went first and took her place in the stern of the ship, and close beside her Telemachus took his place. The men cast off the stern cables, and themselves also went aboard and sat to the oarlocks. As a side note, I believe we can assume Athena has handpicked each of these men. That's why she went through town choosing men for this voyage. Line 420. The goddess gray-eyed Athena sent them a favoring stern wind, strong Zephyrus, who murmured over the wine-blue water. Telemachus then gave the sign and urged his companions to lay hold of the tackle, and they listened to his urging, and, raising the mast pole made of it, they set it upright in the hollow hole in the box and made it fast with forestays, and with halyards strongly twisted of leather pulled up the white sails. The wind blew into the middle of the sail, and at the cutwater a blue wave rose and sang strongly as the ship went onward. She ran swiftly, cutting across the swell her pathway. Line 430. When they had made fast the running gear all along the black ship, then they set up mixing bowls, filling them brimful with wine, and poured to the gods immortal and everlasting, but beyond all other gods they poured to Zeus's gray-eyed daughter, Athena, all night long and into the dawn she ran on her journey. And thus ends Book 2.